regarding the Gentile claims to property rights, their possessions are like unclaimed land in the desert. It is always a meritorious deed to get hold of a Gentile's possession. I'm just reading all these statements from their holy book, the Talmud.
Yeah.
When a Jew has a Gentile in his clutches, another Jew may go to the same Gentile, lend him money, and in his turn deceive him, so that the Gentile shall be ruined. But the property of a Gentile, according to our law, belongs to no one. And the first Jew that passes has full right to seize it. Here's another one. It is not permitted to rob a brother, but it is permitted to rob a non-Jew. For it is written, Leviticus 19:13, thou shalt not rob thy neighbor. But these words, said Jehovah, do not apply to a goy who is not thy brother. There's another one. Jews must always try to deceive Christians. This is Zohar 1:168. All of these have reference, but I'm skipping the reference in the interest of time.
Right.
Here's another one. Jews are human beings. The other peoples of the world are not human beings, but beasts. It is all from the Jewish holy books. Although the peoples of the world outwardly resemble Jews, they are only as apes in comparison with men. The souls of the non-Jewish people come from the devil, and are souls such as the cattle and animals have. The seed of the stranger also is cattle seed. The houses of the goyim are the houses of animals. You see, that's why the Jews are allowed to rob me, because I'm just an animal, see? I'm not even a human being. Marriage is taking place amongst Gentiles have no binding strength. Their cohabitation is just as the coupling of horses. Therefore, their children do not stand as humanly related to their parents. The seed child of a Christian is of no more value than that of a beast. All non-Jews are whores. A Gentile girl who is 3 years old can be violated. This is Abode Shara 37a. Do not save Christian children, do not save Christians in danger of death. Extermination of Christians is a necessary sacrifice. The Christian birth rate must be materially diminished. Every foreigner, non-Jew, who glorifies Sunday must be killed without asking him. Even the best among the Gentiles deserves to be killed. The best of the Christians must be strangulated. He who sheds the blood of the goyim is offering a sacrifice to God. If a heathen smites a Jew, he is worthy of death. A heathen who studies the Torah deserves death. Every goy who studies the Talmud and every Jew who helps him in it should die. It is forbidden to initiate a non-Jew into the secrets of the law. The Jew who concerns himself with this is as guilty as if he laid waste the world and denied the sacred name of God. The Jews were created to be served by the non-Jews. The latter must plow, sow, weed, dig, mow, bind, sieve, and grind. The Jews are created to find all this in readiness. And this is exactly what they did with my stuff in the Beacon Storage House of Pasadena. I've saved this stuff up for 30 years, earned it, brought it from all over the world, paid an enormous amount of money in storage fees. I bought the best safe. I got the best storage room in the whole L.A. area. I paid them over $10,000 in storage fees. They stole every goddamn thing because they believe that my job as a non-Jew is to do the work and their job is to get the benefit. See? This is their philosophy. Here's some more stuff they teach. Work is harmful and brings but little. See, this is what they teach their people, the Jews. So if you don't want to work, then how are you going to get rich? You have to steal. See? Here's another. Teach your son an easy vocation and endeavor thereby to acquire estates and riches. There is no meaner calling than that of agriculture, see, according to the Jews, that's their philosophy. Israel is like the lady of the house to whom her husband brings the money. Thus, Israel is without the burden of labor and receives the money from the people of the world. This is Yalkut Shim 75. When they say Israel, they mean Jews. They used to call Jews Israel before the state of Israel, the man the state of Israel was born. Now we have a better idea of what kind of animals we're dealing with, these Jews. They are subhuman. They are the scum of the earth. When you talk about Jews, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like, Bobby, what you just presented, you would find it hard to recover all those stolen goods that you own.
Of course I'm only going to get it back after there's a revolution in the United States and the Jewish dictatorship there is overthrown. Absolutely no chance of getting it back any other way.
Oh, yeah? No chance.
Well, of course, if I were to get down on my knees and beg and then say that the Holocaust happened and all these lies, I'm sure I'd get it back. But I'm not going to do that, you know.
You're going to have to fight for no time then.
Well, hopefully the Jews will get it in the neck soon. There's not a lot of enemies, Pablo, all over the world, you know. And this biological weapons are getting very, very, very cheap and easy to deliver. So I'm optimistic. I'm hoping that Washington, D.C. will be wiped out, you know.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's too strong.
Well, that's what I feel.
Yeah.
You know, I consider myself a very important person. If the U.S. government's against me, I'm against it.
Of course. All right. Eugene was mentioning about your mother. Tell us about your mother.
Now, I want to get into something. After the dirty Jews in America, the U.S. government, and Dobb Ellsworth and Beekins and the Pasadena Police Department and my two former lawyers and so on,
yeah,
robbed all my stuff at Beekins, I sent for my other stuff in storage in New York. I think it's all there. I'm not sure. Who knows? Because that stuff was in storage for a very long time, too.
Uh-huh.
And in there, I found a lot of really interesting stuff from my mother going back to 1960.
Okay.
And she went after a very crooked organization called the American Chess Foundation and another crooked organization called the United States Chess Federation, see?
That's right.
And I dug out this stuff. I sent it over to Eugene. Most of it's on the internet already. I just sent Eugene some more stuff by my mom that I found the other day.
Uh-huh.
And this is really incredible stuff because it ties in, believe it or not, with the robbery that of my stuff had taken a few months ago.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, she was very active in chess. I mean, she's been working very hard for tournaments, and yet I've been reading this stuff, you see. And your mother was even picketing the offices.
Yeah. Well, this organization, the American Chess Foundation, they're really fantastic crooks, you know.
Fantastic.
And my mother, you know, got on to them, and she really went after them. They were using my name.
Yeah.
Were advertising in Chess Review magazine. So that people and asking for donations to give me chess lessons and to send me to tournaments and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But they were never giving me any money. And not only me, they were defrauding all of the American chess scene in general. They were raising enormous amounts of money, the American Chess Foundation, and giving very little back in return. And this American Chess Foundation, by the way, it was a completely Jewish organization.
Oh.
Completely Jewish. And the point is, many years later, after my mother exposed them completely with these documents that I'll get into pretty soon, the American Chess Foundation came out with a magazine called American Chess Journal.
Yeah.
Now, in this American Chess Journal, this is number two. Let me just take this out here.
Okay.
They had an incredible article, and I think it's really... Well, first of all, let me establish that the American Chess Journal...
What year was that?
This is 1993.
93?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
They had an article which in a coded way, announced that they were going to rob my stuff at Beekins, see?
How did they do it?
They get some kind of a charge out of these things, you see? They get a kick out of these things. Now, this American Chess Journal, this is number two, 1993,
mm-hmm.
Was totally controlled by the American Chess Foundation. All of this stuff is on the internet. Tell them where they can get this on the internet, Eugene.
Yeah, Eugene. Yeah, Bobby, they can check this or have a look at it in Bobby Ang's website. It is www.filches.com.ph. Anyway, the spelling of Filches is P-H-I-L-C-H-E-S-S. So they can check there, and they can even print that this one, because it is in Acrobat, something like that. So you could print it, you know, all pages or certain pages or one page, you know. So okay.
All right, let's get back to this American Chess Journal number 2, 1993. This article is also on the internet, right, Eugene?
Right. It's already in the internet. It's 90 pages at the moment in the internet.
This article from American Chess Journal, this 6 pages, is also on the internet.
It's also there, yeah. That is from the 15 to 20 page,
Right. Now, let me this magazine was controlled by the American Chess Brother. It says on the table of contents that they talk about, a benefactor of this magazine is Jacques Coe. Now, Jacques Coe, if you read my mother's literature, his name is mentioned as one of the directors of the American Chess Foundation way back in 1960.
Right.
Furthermore, they say special thanks to the American Chess Foundation. And then you go down a little lower, and it says, American Chess Journal is a nonprofit venture of American Chess Journal, Inc., incorporated under Chapter 180 of the Massachusetts General Laws. We encourage you to support this project and help ensure its continued success by making a donation, either directly to us or through the American Chess Foundation. See? So there's no question, this is an American Chess Foundation publication, 100%.
Uh-huh.
No question, American Chess Foundation's money was behind it, and they completely controlled it.
Yeah, okay. Very clear, yeah.
Now, I just want to establish that. And also I want to establish American Chess Foundation is a totally Jewish outfit. I just give you the list of the names that were on it in 1960. Walter J. Fried, Alexander Bisnow, Rosser Reeves, Morris J. Casper, Jacques Coe, Mrs. Cecile Wertheim, Lessing J. Rosenwald. I know for a fact all of those individuals are Jewish.
Okay.
Now, let's get into this article that they wrote in 1993, the American Chess Journal. They have an article called Going One. See? Now, let me read this article, okay?
Okay.
On 29 April 1993, an auction of sets, and remember, this is back in 93. This is like 5 years before they robbed the Jewish Beacons, and the Jewish U.S. government robbed my stuff at Beacons Day. Okay. On 29 April 1999, an auction of sets and other chess collectibles.
You mean 1993? Or 1993?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. On 29th April 1993, an auction of sets and other chess collectibles, including a few books, was held in New York City. Auctioneer Geza von Hatzberg conducted the proceedings with impressive efficiency and a bit of humor. Although many lots did not draw their minimum bid, several went for over $1,000. The highest price, $4,400, including the 10% premium, was paid for a complete Waterford crystal set with a 6.5-inch king. According to Claudia Strauss of the sponsoring Metropolitan Arts and Antiques Pavilion, now here's the key part here. Listen to this. The auction demonstrated that there is a good market for chess collectibles and more are planned. Now the very next word in this magazine in big, double-sized, bold type is what? Fisher. See?
Yeah.
This was their little in-joke. Now the next article after that is called Fisher Update. Now this article, in a subliminal manner, is meant to condition and prepare the public to accept that the confiscation and the robbery, the auctioning off of my belongings at Beacons is a perfectly natural an acceptable happening, see?
Yeah.
So let me read this article, and then you'll see how they are trying to make it appear that I'm totally a wreck of a human being, and I don't care about my property, I don't care about anything anymore, see?
Okay, all right.
Well, both though, okay?
Go ahead, yeah.
In our on-the-scene account of the Fischer-Spassky rematch last issue, we reported the widely shared suspicion among respectable Yugoslavs that Jezdimir Vasilievich, the mysterious entrepreneur who sponsored the match, was a crook, and that his Yugoscandic bank, which paid up to 15% a month on deposit, was a scam. We speculated that perhaps he was financing the chess spectacle with the hard-earned savings of bank depositors. One reader wrote us that it was irresponsible journalism to publish such rumors and speculation. Perhaps it was. But Time reported, that's Time Magazine, I think, that in April 1993, about 5 months after the end of the revenge match of the century, the Yugoscandic bank failed, and Vasilievich absconded to Israel with $1 million in cash in a suitcase. Fischer, according to USA Today, had deposited most of his $3 million-plus of prize money in the Yugoscandic bank. When the bank failed, he apparently lost his money. See? And that's a huge lie, but it's a deliberate lie to condition people that, well, he's broke, you see? That's why he didn't pay his storage fees, you see?
This is what you were referring before, that they kept on repeating and repeating and repeating.
Right, right.
You lost your
money.
Yes,
an outright lie. My money is in the Union Bank of Switzerland. I've still got over $3 million in there right now.
Right, right.
The Union Bank of Switzerland, Zurich. That's where my dough is.
Yeah.
Okay. He is under indictment by the U.S. government for violating U.S. law in playing the Spassky match in Yugoslavia. The fugitive Fischer may now wonder what he had actually gained by playing the match with Spassky. See? Press reports have created a sketchy picture of Fischer's reclusive life after the match. Apparently, he remained in Belgrade for several months, renting suites in a luxury hotel for himself and his bodyguards. During this time, he seems to have negotiated with Laszlo Polgar for a match with Judith Polgar to be sponsored by Vasilievich. This would have been an interesting match, but despite widespread rumors, negotiations were never close to being finalized. Vasilievich ended up sponsoring a match between Judith Polgar and Spassky, won by Judith 5.5-4.5. After the Yugoscandic bank crashed, Fischer moved north to a small village near the Serbian border with Hungary. The August 1993 issue of Chess carried a peculiar letter from Hungarian Grandmaster Andras Adroyan, who claimed to have visited Fischer at the Aquamarine Health Center on the Serbian-Hungarian border. He said that Fischer was being held prisoner there, guarded by four bodyguards and Serbian secret police. Fischer, said Adroyan, was being cheated, betrayed, and abused. Deeply depressed about being cheated of his prize money, he was being poisoned by drugs and moved and talked like a broken man. Now, you see, the point is, they're conditioning the public that so that later on, when my stuff is robbed, that the Jews plan to rob it, they'll say, well, yeah, he lost it. He had no money to pay, and anyway, he's on drugs, and he's a broken man. He probably didn't even remember that he had stuff in storage, you see? Let me continue with this article. On 6th August, the Associated Press reported that Fischer was definitely in Hungary negotiating seriously for the long-mooted Polgar match. According to Hungarian state television, Fischer was staying in a well-guarded house owned by Laszlo Polgar in the town of Nagymaros, north of Budapest. The Budapest Sport Daily, Sport Plus Poki, quoted Laszlo Polgar as saying that conditions for a match had been agreed to, and all we need now is the right sponsor. The Sports Daily also printed a photograph of Fischer in Budapest. Later, conflicting reports suggest that Fischer wanted to play either blitz chess or shuffle chess with the pieces rearranged on the first rank before starting each game against either Judith or both Judith and Zhuzha Polgar for a $5 million purse. Now, here's this next sentence here, this next paragraph. The Jews at the American Chess Journal and American Chess Foundation, it's the same thing, they show their intense hatred toward me. Listen to this statement. Perhaps Fischer can't bear all the publicity that Garry Kasparov is once again getting after breaking with Fide and in founding the Professional Chess Association, PCA. The veteran Anatoly Karpov, recipient of Fischer's title in 1975, is also back on the scene playing for the vacant Fide world title. So they're trying to make me sound like a very petty, jealous person, you see? And of course, that's why I accuse Karpov and Kasparov of prearranging all their matches, right? Because I'm such a petty, jealous person. I can't bear to see them getting all this publicity, right? See? Now, let me give them this article's almost finished. It is ironic that Kasparov seems to be succeeding in his fight against Fide, where Fischer failed 18 years ago. One difference is that Kasparov, despite his occasionally abrasive personality, is a genuine hustler who backs up his decisions with concrete actions. And another reason is Kasparov is a Jew, by the way, okay?
Uh-huh.
Kasparov went out and found new sponsorship for his PCA title match. Fischer, by contrast, sulked in his tent. Of course, Kasparov has the cooperation